This episode is brought to you by Get Group. Learn more about secure, ISO-compliant mobile driver's licenses and sign up for a demo at getgroupna.com. Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the AnvaCast. I am excited this week to welcome a friend of mine and a familiar personality in the AMBA circuit, Bernard Suriano, who is the Deputy Director of Registration Operations at the California Department of Motor Vehicles. Bernard, welcome to the AMBACast.
Hey, Ian. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Bernard, you have been around the AMVA community for a number of years and have worked in a lot of different areas. I'm sure folks are wondering what we're going to chat about with someone who is so well-versed in the different topics. And I know there's many we could talk about, but I really want to chat with you, Bernard, about self-driving vehicles, autonomous vehicles, automation, all the different other phrases and labels that we put on this technology. You have been at the forefront of this, leading California DMV's efforts over a number of years, and you have been the chairman of AMVA's own subcommittee on autonomous vehicles for a number of years as well. So if okay with you, that's where we'll focus the discussion today.
Oh my God. Yes, certainly okay with me. It's my favorite subject.
I guess so many subjects, you've been living and breathing that in many ways so much more than the other subjects for a number of years now, haven't you?
I've been fortunate enough to be involved in a number of different efforts throughout the years. And I have to say, this one effort with automated vehicles is certainly one of the most challenging, but also the one that really gets people excited, not just in the AMVA community, but outside of AMVA, because of the potential and because of the way that it affects society as a whole.
Mm. And maybe you were joking, maybe you weren't. You said it's your favorite topic. Is that true? Is that really evolved?
Yeah, no, I was not joking. It is my favorite topic, and it's one that I could go on and speak about. So you've got your challenge in front of you, is trying to keep us within our time limit.
Well, let's start with from the AMVA perspective. You are the chair of the committee that recently updated our guidance in this area. On one hand, the technology is evolving very rapidly. On another hand, it seems like the past period of time, things have stabilized a little bit, and it's a more finite scope of really what's changed most recently. So maybe start with, in that document that we've recently published, what are some of the highlights that folks may really want to focus in on what's different from the previous edition?
Right. So when we published the original document, that really was produced at a time when automated vehicles were being first introduced to the general public. And when new technology gets introduced, imaginations run amok with, what the possibilities are, and that gets people excited. And so there were so many unknowns about the technology, and there were so many unknowns about how the technology could be used. And our document reflected that. It reflected the things that jurisdictions are recommended to look at should they decide to administer autonomous vehicles in their particular area. And this included things like, what are some of the things that companies need to do in order to be able to test their technology safely on the street? Mm-hmm. And as the technology was being developed and how it is being developed, there gets to be a point where you get saturated with the features, and the practicality of the features need to be addressed. So things like, how will the technology actually work in a particular business function? We were looking at it from the standpoint of passenger vehicles, and we're quickly learning that passenger vehicles may not be the first instance of this technology, that maybe this is going to first roll out in vehicles that are used for goods delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Goods delivery in a number of different ways. So our document needed to change. It also needed to change from the standpoint of the terminology. You know, early on, autonomous vehicles was the phrase that was being used to define what these vehicles consist of. And autonomous carries the connotation of, you know, a vehicle that can be operated in a way that requires no human intervention. And mm-hmm. really, that is just one at one extreme of the spectrum. And there are so many other features of the technology that get you there. And those features will come to fruition sooner rather than that endpoint. So the terminology autonomous might be a little too early to be mm-hmm. used. So therefore, we adopted the phrase automated. And that is something that the industry is migrating towards and the industry is supportive of. So things like that are what, you know, we looked at. We also looked at some practical things for law enforcement to be aware of, as well as some of the things that companies need to do in order to ensure that their vehicles are being either operated or tested safely on the public roads.
And so how does the evolution of that document, how would you say that's comparing with the evolution in the marketplace as well? So you talked about how we thought maybe it was first going to be passenger vehicles and now perhaps it's more going to be on the commercial vehicle side. You know, where do we see things in the sense of when the first document went out, it was very much testing and development, less on the deployment side. Are we seeing things being deployed? Are folks actually out there operating these vehicles and we're just not hearing about it as much anymore because there's so many other things in the news or other reasons why it's not getting the attention? Or is it still really a lot more testing and development that's occurring?
I think it's the latter or the former. It's that testing is still occurring and there are still quite a few companies that are testing. At the same time, there are companies that are looking at deployment strategies, but they're looking at deployment strategies from a different standpoint. And an example of that is goods delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So our document, while we just released it, it really shows how the technology can change so quickly. Because while the base technology is there, you detect some of the vulnerable road users and maneuver the vehicle in a way to keep those vulnerable road users safe. The application of that has changed where the focus seems to be right now. Let's see how we can use that technology to deliver items, either deliver perishable items like groceries or other items such as goods that you order off of Amazon. So we're looking at the technology being put into vehicles that really aren't your traditional vehicles that you would see on the roadways, vehicles that are designed where no human is in the vehicle at all, and vehicles that also have scaled to be much smaller. Our document needs to be updated to account for that because it really doesn't speak to this new change.
So tell us more about what that looks like. Obviously, when you think of goods delivery, you think of a automated tractor trailer coming down the road, moving goods in what a, you know, semi would have done previously, not unlike the, you know, very well covered beer truck delivery in Colorado. Are we talking about that? Are we talking about local deliveries? Are we talking about first and last mile with it, you know, that being manned and everything else in between being automated? To unpack that a little bit more for me.
Yeah, so that's It's all of those. Certainly, the automation is being looked at from a long haul delivery standpoint with heavy duty vehicles. But the ones that seem to be the newer development is the last mile delivery scenario, where goods are delivered to the final destination, and the vehicles that are used for that are a multitude. First is, let's talk about the grocery delivery. There are vehicles that are about the size of a golf cart, and they're packed with groceries that you've ordered through an app or a smartphone to have delivered to your residence. And those groceries would be packed at the grocery store and loaded onto a vehicle that looks sort of like an oversized golf cart, like I said, that would be appropriately refrigerated and things of that nature. And they would travel at low speeds, lower than 25 miles an hour, and come up to the curb of your residence. And then the person who ordered the groceries would come out and take delivery of those groceries. That's certainly just one instance. Mm-hmm. Another would be these vehicles or devices that are about the size of a cooler that would traverse on sidewalks and cross streets, and they would contain other items that maybe you've ordered, maybe from a restaurant or something like that. Companies have developed these various types of vehicles and devices and are currently testing them in a number of jurisdictions, not just in California. And so a lot of questions around the administration of those vehicles and how they should be handled, not just from a DMV standpoint, but from a law enforcement standpoint and so forth. So, those are just two examples. There are others as well, other models of how goods can be delivered directly to the consumer and solve that last mile problem.
What's interesting there is that all of a sudden seems like a aggressive shift on the automation side in terms of carrying the goods with no person in there, as opposed to what the focus was somewhat originally, so to speak, where it was the automation of the passenger car of moving people. And so how does the, from a regulatory standpoint, does it change the public agency's role when there is no person in the vehicle, separate from whether the person can intercede with control of the vehicle or not? But the idea of whether you're just carrying stuff or carrying people, does the regulatory position start to change?
I think it does. I think it does quite a bit and very dramatically. Although the fundamental responsibility is still there, that responsibility of the safe operation of a vehicle on the roadways supersedes, every aspect. That's what we have to do. That's our charge. COVID, I think, is one of the issues or one of the drivers for this rapid change. There's a need for contactless delivery of items, which is why the removal of the human in the vehicle was advantageous. And so that necessitated that accelerated the technology. And I think that from a regulatory standpoint and the responsibility of different agencies relative to this technology, without a human on board, many questions come into play that need to be answered and need to be answered in a way that is still meets the needs of the regulatory agencies. So, for example, if goods are being delivered remotely or without a human, mm-hmm. Should there be some limitation about what can be delivered remotely? And should there be some construct around how it can be delivered? Sensitive items such as medication or ammunition or things of that nature, liquor. Should that be looked upon from in conjunction with the other governmental agencies that are involved in regulating those items? And how should they be involved? So it expands the scope of what motor vehicle agencies traditionally would be looking at, because the human is no longer in the vehicle.
I just all of a sudden had a vision of this automated delivery cart pulling up with liquor, as your example, where I go out and I use my MDL with a tying biometric to interact with this automated vehicle to verify it's me and I'm of age to receive the liquor. And then it goes back home. It's very futuristic, but all very real at the same time.
Right. And very concerning.
Why? Why do you say that? Why concerning?
I say that because the switch just can't be flipped right away and have that be put in place. Because many of those edge cases that come along with that one example need to be dealt with, mm-hmm. right? So Ian going out and getting the liquor at the curbside is certainly one of the use cases, and that use case has no issues whatsoever. There could be others, other scenarios that would have a multitude of different use cases that need to be dealt with. What if the biometric that was used is not the appropriate biometric? Mm. What if the identity is not the correct identity? Who gets to deal with that? Is that the motor vehicle agency, or is that an agency that's involved in the distribution of liquor? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, things like that.
So what about out in California, where so much of this stuff is being tested and developed? How much of it is being seen out in deployment now versus, is being done in test beds on all these types of technology, not just the delivery vehicles, but, back to where it started with the manufacturers and the, automation in the passenger vehicles. Are you seeing it starting to pop up more and more?
We are. We just recently approved another company to be able to test their vehicles on the roadways without a driver. Mm-hmm. That company is Cruise, or General Motors Cruise, and that's the fifth company. And Cruise is testing their vehicles in San Francisco, so a very urban environment. And they're the first company to do so in a very urban environment. So that, has a lot of challenges. Now, Cruise's business model right now is is passengers and not goods delivery, but other companies that have received a very similar permit to be able to test on the city streets or on the public streets without a person on board are in the business of goods delivery. Nuro is one of those companies. And Nuro is one that is looking at this contactless delivery and eventually having it deployed in various areas. They've also worked in places like Arizona to deliver groceries and other jurisdictions as well. As my understanding is what they're looking at.
Now, and I know that California has always had a regulatory structure that really obligates all those that are testing to let the DMV know anytime there's any type of incident involving these vehicles that they're testing. How is that going in terms of seeing data trends on the safety record? Because at the end of this, really what we want this all to be about is this technology to improve safety and mobility and not, cause a threat. So how is the testing and the data you're collecting from the data, generally speaking, showing on that safety trend?
On that front, it seems very, very promising. The crashes that have occurred in testing have all been crashes where a human was on board, and they've been very, very minor. It's been typically a conventionally driven vehicle hitting a autonomous or automated vehicle at an intersection. And it's because the automated vehicle is following the rules of the road. That's the typical crash that we've seen. And it happens at low speeds, somewhere in the neighborhood of, 5 miles an hour or less. We have not seen any crashes with vehicles that do not have a driver on board. Not yet, anyway. That being said, we're always on the lookout for metrics that would speak to the safe operation of the vehicles and how we can use that metric as a barometer for whether the technology is ready for large-scale deployment.
And so as that's happening, and it's happening more aggressively and publicly, are you seeing any shift in public perception of the technology? I think at the outset of this, there was a lot of skepticism, but I think that may or may not be shifting.
Yeah, that's a great question, Ian. I've always said this isn't just about the technology. I've always felt that it's as much the technology as it is how communication about this technology happens, because the public perception is a huge aspect to this. The successful rollout of this. The public needs to be fully aware of the capabilities of what the vehicle can do. The public needs to be informed of what the risks are. And the public needs to understand what the benefits are of this technology. In general, I don't think the public realizes how dangerous it is out on the streets, how dangerous it is on our roadways. When you do tell people about the grim statistics, oftentimes the reaction I get is one of surprise. They don't realize that many people are getting hurt or unfortunately dying on our roadways. But at the same time, there's some skepticism about whether or not automation will solve that problem. I don't think anyone has an expectation that, the fatalities on our roadways will go to zero with automation. But I think it's reasonable to assume that automation will certainly help. Vehicles are not going to be driving while they're intoxicated. They're not going to be speeding. They're not going to be running a red light, which is all of those things are big contributors to crashes.
Right.
So I think it's reasonable to expect that the technology is going to lead to safer streets, but the key is being able to effectively communicate that to the public so they understand it.
And to build that trust and the confidence that the technology can actually do it.
Exactly.
And, unlike you, there's a small population, there's a small population that has had that firsthand experience so far. You've been able to ride in a number of these vehicles, am I correct?
Yep, I have been. I've been fortunate enough to be in many of these vehicles. And I can tell you, before you go into the vehicles, you get this excitement and this feeling of doing something new, and you can't wait to see what it feels like. But after about a minute or so, you realize this thing is just driving along the way it's supposed to drive. And you very quickly accept the fact that, this thing's driving safely and I'm going to be okay in this. So it really, I don't want to say it becomes boring at that point, but it's one where it's, maybe mundane to an extent, which also speaks to how difficult it must be for these test drivers of the companies. These test drivers have to be in these vehicles to ensure as a human backup that the vehicles are going to be safe. They have to be alert and they have to be situationally aware the whole time. And if the technology is working, I can see how you can get lulled into this sense that, okay, I, I don't really need to pay attention very much. Well, you do have to pay attention.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way. I mean, if you think about how you behave in the car when you're in the passenger seat versus the driver's seat, we all know where, you know, that mental attention and focus changes. And to have to be in the driver's seat, so to speak, where you have to be paying attention, being focused without physically actively engaging in the act of driving, it almost might even mentally be more challenging than actually driving the vehicle.
Right. Exactly.
Huh. That's funny. Well, Bernard, we only have a few minutes left, and we always like to take the opportunity to learn a little bit about the people in our community. And I think a lot of folks know you and are aware of your work in this area, but you were certainly with the California DMV for a number of times, a length of time before even there was a discussion of autonomous vehicles and automation. When did you first join the California DMV?
Oh, I first joined the DMV in late 2004, early 2005. Mm-hmm. So it's been 15 years now since I first joined. And when I did join, I was initially the chief information officer and the deputy director over our information systems division, which is our IT department. And it was in that capacity that I first got involved with AMBA and, worked on a number of items, state to state being one of them, as well as a number of other technology endeavors that that AMBA was spearheading. So it's been a number of years, migrated from the technology area within the California DMV to the executive office. And then the risk management division, which I headed up, and now the registration operations division. So I've seen quite a bit at the California DMV, but I'm still considered a baby here. We've got a number of people that have been with the California DMV for a lot longer than I have.
Yeah, I think that's so true, and so in so many of these jurisdiction agencies, that history is really amazing. But you're not a native of California.
No, I'm not. I was born and raised in Hawaii and grew up there. And after high school, I did my undergraduate work here in Northern California at the University of California at Davis, and then continued with graduate work down in Los Angeles. Went to USC and then got my PhD at the University of California, Irvine, all in engineering. Mm-hmm. And I worked in the aerospace industry for a number of years, and where we built satellites, and I was in charge of the attitude control systems. So these would be the systems on the spacecraft that would control that spacecraft and how it was pointing and where it was pointing, to ensure that the signals are always pointing where they're supposed to be.
Wow.
And these would be commercial satellites as well as military satellites. So the importance of making sure your signal is pointing where it's supposed to be is, that needs to happen. And so I was fortunate enough to be involved in the launch and the missions on those, and really enjoyed that time. And worked on the East Coast for a number of years, before coming back to California to be in state government.
Well, that's super interesting. I don't think, Bernard, we've been friends now for a number of years, and I don't think I knew all of that history and experience and working in spacecraft and military and working on those satellites. That's super fascinating. I think always knowing that your signal is pointing in the right direction is not only important in satellites and technology. I think that's philosophically something to always remember. I'm almost going to steal that saying from you and make it a life's journey.
I like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bernard, I appreciate you spending so much time with us today. I know folks are always interested in learning about this emerging technology and knowing when it's going to continue to be real and part of our everyday lives, which I think it's just going to seep in and organically start appearing more and more over the years and decades ahead of us.
Well, Ian, thanks again for having me. I really enjoyed it and appreciate the invite to be on here. Thank you.
Absolutely. And always appreciative of all of your contributions to AMVA's community, speaking at conferences or committees and working groups. You're just always such a reliable source of expertise.
Thank you.
To the rest of you, thank you again for tuning in. Tell your friends to follow us, download, subscribe, do whatever you have to do to get everybody to listen to our AmvaCast. Want to thank our producer, Claire Jeffrey, and we'll see you all next time on the AmvaCast. Stay well, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for AmvaCast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur. This episode has been brought to you by Get Group. Visit us at amvacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.